My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
And we welcome you into our Warriors Weekly podcast for 95.7 The Game. It's John Dickinson and Matt Steinmetz once again. And Steiny, as we record this, the 8-game homestand is in the books, and the Warriors wind up losing to the Suns, basically got blown out, made a run in the second half. But they got Steph Curry back. They had Andrew Wiggins back. Here's the way I put it on the post-game show. The Warriors had their top seven against the Suns. The Suns had one starter and basically the back half of their roster in Mikal Bridges. And you know, no Chris Paul, no Booker, no Ayton, no Cam Johnson. Really, the Suns just they didn't have their squad, and they were able to get the Warriors down 27 and ultimately win. Bad homestand, flat out, as far as the 5-3 goes, and just I think really one of the more alarming losses of the entire season, given the fact that the Warriors have been talking about how it's go time, and then they come out and they basically play as if all they thought they had to do was show up against a depleted Phoenix team, and they got bit.
Yeah, so last night I'm thinking about their homestand, and they went 5-3, and I figured, what grade would you give it? And I'm giving it a D plus. A D sounds too harsh for a 5-3 homestand. But when you start digging into the homestand, JD, there's a lot of troubling things that you see. And one is that if you take a look at the teams that they played on this homestand right now, 7 of those teams are under 500. The only team plus 500 that they've played in the last 8 was Memphis. So they went out and they beat Memphis on Christmas, the best team. Then they played 7 straight games against 500-ish or worse teams. They went 4-3. And in none of those games did they have a comfortable victory. Not only did they not have a comfortable victory, they're using their veterans in a way that they really haven't used this early in past years. And so the question to me becomes, okay, they're 20-21 and we know what they did last year and we know they have championship pedigree, but that's no guarantee that it's going to happen this year. And in the meantime, you know, I keep telling people they were 30-11 at this point last year. So when you say, oh, don't forget they had a tough stretch last year. Yes, they did. But it was after they had established themselves as either the best team in the league or the second best, let's say, in the Western Conference with Phoenix. So they had proven to themselves by now they could be good. And I don't think they have any clue right now if they can be good or not.
No, I think last night against the Suns, it really is. I mean, that was the worst roster that they faced on the homestand, and it was the most complete that they were on the homestand. And, you know, we've talked about this a lot over the years, how seemingly for a team that's played as many big games together as this Warriors team has and as the Big Three has, anytime you take pieces away and then you add pieces back, it seemingly always takes them two or three games to get everybody in sync. And the issue, though, that I have is that shouldn't have mattered last night. And I think you could even make the case that bringing Curry back for the game last night was, yeah, Curry was ready to play. But I think it also was, you know what? Maybe that is the game where he and others have to knock off the rust together. But it's a home game against a team that's so depleted that even if it isn't perfect, you can still win it. And now they can't even win that game. And so to me, as this team looks to head on the road under 500, and I'll tell you why I called it a bad homestand, because you started the homestand under 500 and you're going to end the homestand now under 500. Now you gained a couple of games, you were minus three, now you're minus one, but given as bad as they've been on the road and the fact that I think when you look at the layout of this upcoming trip, while there are some winnable games, it's also no picnic with a couple of back-to-backs and some afternoon games involved here as well. I mean, this is not just as much as the Warriors keep acting like they can flip the switch. There's been times we're waiting for them to flip it and they either can't or for whatever reason have just not the – like it to me, and there's a lot to get to, but the lack of purpose – and intensity that the Warriors played the game against Phoenix with was alarming, considering how purposeful they played the first, let's say, four or five games of the homestand. To me, did they have their guys back and they thought they could let up, or did they expend so much energy in the first five games that they just didn't have the ability to compete? Like, they competed their ass off against Memphis and Charlotte and Utah and Portland and Atlanta. There were parts of all five of those games where it looked like the Warriors may lose the game, and maybe because they weren't on that night the better team, but they always kept competing in the game. And last night there was just no competitive juice at all, really, until they got down 27. And at that point, you get down 27 late in the third quarter, you're probably not coming back even against a depleted team. And the Warriors still proved to be too much. I think they got as close as 9 or 10, and that was about it.
Well, and the other thing, JD, you know, I'm watching the Warriors last night, and they looked, to me, they looked like a team that the Warriors used to always scoff at. And what I mean by that is they were a three-point shooting team that shot okay. Their defense is absolutely, positively deplorable. It really is, JD, to let that team score as many points as they scored last night. That team, see, that's a switch that, and obviously they turned up the heat in the, you know, last 8-9 minutes of the game. But, you know, this is where I push back on, well, Clay's back and Draymond's having a great year. And, well, you know what? Draymond's not having a great year. Draymond's been good. But defensively, if you look at their entire starting five, who's playing defense as well as they have last year? I don't think anybody, not even Curry. Remember last year we were talking about Curry's defense. It was good. Good for him, probably one of the better years. He's not been good on defense. Clay's not been good. Draymond, I think, is showing us that he's not going to be able to put together long stretches of intense games. So I don't know. I mean, the only thing, JD, there's two things to me that people are relying on, and both of them are not tangible. And one is, well, they did it last year, so they'll do it this. They can do it this year. Well, I don't buy that. I mean, I'll give them championship pedigree. You must, but they're not going to do it just because they did it last year. And we can get into what fell into place and what didn't last year. And then the other thing that I think is giving people a false sense of security is the fact that, you know, everybody's bunched up around 500 in the West. And so, well, no harm, no foul. Well, there's starting to become a little separation now up at four. And, you know, people forget they were a third seed last year.
Yes.
Not a six. You know what I mean? They were a third seed. They won 53 games. They ain't getting near 53 this year.
No, there's a little bit of revisionist history to what the Warriors did, almost in a way making them a bigger underdog at times than they really were. I mean, to your point about being 30-11 at the halfway mark versus 20-21 this year, I mean, I think that's very much in play as far as that goes. And this is just a different team than right. last year's team was. And
JD, they're not as good.
No, they're not.
They're 20-21, and last year's team was 30-11. They're not even in the same ballpark.
No, and it just, you know, that team, and I keep coming back to this, they showed us how good they could be.
Right.
And this Warriors team has yet to show us how good they can be. I think their best stretch at any point was 10-4. And it was just, I mean, all right, well, you know what? There's a lot of teams that go 10-4. Utah and Portland were both 10-4 at points at the very beginning of this right. year. You know, and now they're both under 500 right there, basically, with the Warriors. I think as far as the standings go, I think that in some ways you can look at it as, okay, it's wide open, da-da-da. I think it's actually the Warriors 20-21. I think it's a worse 20-21. Like, I think you can make the case because the rest of the West is so mediocre all the way down. Like, sometimes that gets mischaracterized as – all these teams are really good. Actually, no. I think it's all these teams are mediocre and they beat each other and they lose to teams that are worse than them. And they sometimes they might beat a team that's in that higher tier here and there. And I think the fact that it's all bunched up makes the 20-21. Like if there were some better teams at the top and really some better teams, you know, 5-8 in the West, more established teams, I think the Warriors would be in. They'd be in worse shape, but they'd be in worse shape because their 20-21 wouldn't even be as good as it is because they'd be farther down in the pecking order. So I think even that is a little bit of a misnomer, Steiny.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And you know, I'm watching last night's game and it's so, you know, they used to walk a perfect balance of 3-point shooting and then spreading the floor enough where they got so many easy baskets at the rim. I saw a 3-point shooting team. That's, you know, they're so guard oriented right now. It is unbelievable without Wiggins being Wiggins. And so I'm looking at a team, they got three guards. They got Curry, Poole, and Clay, and they're trying to shoot them to victory on nights when they don't play defense. And, you know, you look at those three guys' numbers last night. They didn't shoot great, but they weren't bad. Their 3-point percentage, I want to say combined, was pretty darn good. I think it's a game they win most of the time, but yeah, their defense is awful. Awful. And how's that going to get better? That to me is age. That to me is just, it's proof that they're not going to be able to be great defensively in as long of stretches as they've been in the past. And they just don't have a lot of margin for error. You know, it's like when people say, Draymond Green's defense has slipped. Okay, well, he's still a great defender. Yeah, he's still very good. He's still above average. There's no doubt about it. But he's not great. He's had great games. But what I'm getting at is his slip from an A-plus defender to a B-plus defender, that hurts. That's a bucket here and there, maybe. And you start doing that for everybody, and you realize winning, if they're giving up 120 points a night, their defense is like fifth worst in the league. The only teams worse defensively are the Lakers, the Spurs, and then Orlando and Detroit. So the three worst teams in the league outside Houston have worse defenses, and then the Lakers. So I mean, it's halfway through the season.
Right.
Where's the switch? What makes you believe there is one?
No, I think that's, to me, I'm having a hard time believing there is one at this point.
Real quick, here's the other thing, JD. And you, this is, I want to expand on the thing that you talked about. Okay, well, you know, quietly now, what? Kuminga and Wiseman have missed a couple weeks. All right, so hopefully they come back during the road trip. But guess what? They probably won't be as good as they were when they left. And then they're going to play less minutes. And you have to prepare for Kuminga and Wiseman not being as good as they were when they got hurt. Their balance is so tenuous.
Well, as far as Kuminga and Wiseman, I mean, I think we need to prepare ourselves for the fact that Wiseman now, whenever he comes back, he's just going to be a non-factor again, because it's taken him so long and so many reps over time to just be even a small factor that you can't tell me that him not playing for 2 or 3 weeks, however long it winds up being, means that he's able to step in and just be a member of the rotation again. I mean, he was a small member of the rotation for basically 3 games. I mean, let's not get carried away with his impact. Now, I do think Kuminga can make more of an impact, but Kuminga is going to be playing less now than he had been playing when the Warriors were so banged up and depleted. So, you know, he's going to have to fit his game into that proverbial box that we always talk about of, you know, not having the freedom to go out there and make as many mistakes. And I think, you know, that's the other part of this too, is, you know, it's the adjustment of, you know, all right, Curry and Wiggins by the end of the game against Phoenix, I think, had knocked some rust off. So they're maybe ready to go now on a little bit of a run themselves, let's say, as the Warriors get on the road. But there's still the adjustment of Jordan Poole's got to now figure out how to be a bench player again. And Steve Kerr now has to figure out who the 9 players he's going to play and how he's going to play them again. It's almost in a lot of ways like starting over for the Warriors, as, you know, right in the middle of the season. And it feels like there's been 3 or 4 different times where the Warriors have had to start over. And every time they do, they wind up taking some losses along the way that cost them, to the tune of now being halfway through the year and being a game under 500. So I don't think that's necessarily going to be easy to just turn around without, again, a cost. And I start looking at this road trip, and, you know, there are winnable games on the road trip. There's no question. But when you look at the fact that, and this is where I think the 5-3 was just not good enough on the homestand, you know, you're going and you're playing San Antonio with 60,000 people in the Alamo Dome. That's not your ordinary playing one of the worst teams in the league kind of games. It's a nationally televised game. You know, the Spurs are going to have extra juice. It's just going to be different. There's going to be more attention on that game than there would be if the Warriors were just strolling in on January 13th to San Antonio and the Spurs are one of the worst teams in the league and nobody's really paying attention. Nobody's paying attention to that game. You look up at the end of the night, oh, Warriors won 113-98. Like, no, of course they did, because they're the Warriors and the Spurs are the Spurs. I'm not saying the Warriors are not going to win that game. They should go in there and win that game anyway. But I feel like that game's going to take a little bit more of a toll than a normal San Antonio game would, even if you're getting the win. Then you've got an afternoon game against the Bulls. So you're going from San Antonio to Chicago Friday night, and you've got an afternoon game against the Bulls on Sunday. So you're not even getting a full 48 hours in between games. It's closer to about 36. And so then you're playing the Bulls, and then you're going to Washington, and it's a back-to-back, but it's 2 day games. It's 2 afternoon games.
Yep.
The MLK holiday, and then you're staying over. And those, by the way, are the 3 most winnable games on the homestand. Then you're staying over because you're going to the White House for the first time since 2016. And so that's a day where, sure, it's great. It's celebratory, and there isn't a lot you got to do, but you're out of that normal routine again. Then you're going to Boston. And you're going to have a practice day in Boston, and the Celtics are going to be all wound up because you just kicked their ass at Chase. You beat them in the finals last year. And so that game's going to have some added juice to it. And then you got a back-to-back at Cleveland, who's been one of the better teams in the Eastern Conference to this point, and one of the better teams at home in the Eastern Conference to this point. And that's the second of a back-to-back in the 5th game in 8, and one that maybe you would even look at ahead of time and think, yeah, you know what, that might be a game where the Warriors might – give, you know, some guys a night off. But how can you give some guys the night off if you're 2-2 or 1-3 in the first 4, let's say, because you slip up and you lose, you know, maybe in Chicago or something like
that? My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Yeah.
I mean, how many games is Clay going to play of the five?
Three, or four?
Probably three. I mean, the Monday game in the afternoon is going to be brutal for him, I got to believe. So that's the other thing that we're talking about here too, JD, is, you know, when you're – and they have to load manage, but when you load manage as much as they have to load manage Clay, that also messes with your continuity. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Curry sits a game on this trip. And what the message is they really do think that, I mean, it's becoming more and more clear. They really, it's not that they don't care about the regular season, but they almost are forced not to care about it because the entire goal is to get everybody ready for March and April.
Well, they cared about it the first five games of the homestand.
And then, they just can't beat anybody by showing up anymore. They got to win games. You know, they got to win games. And, you know what, say what you want about last night's game. You know, that's a game they would have come back and won during the dynasty run. They would have. And not only that, the Suns, like the Warriors could, they, I know they were down 27, but they had tons of chances in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Phoenix turned it over 22 times and won at Chase Center. I mean, you got to be kidding me. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, they didn't have a point guard down the stretch. They basically were playing without a point guard and didn't put anybody on the floor. And the Warriors started pressing them and, you know, picking up full court. And it was, I mean, they couldn't get the ball over half court. Like, it got to a point where, I mean, it looked like, I mean, there were three, four turnovers in a row, it seemed like. And the Warriors had a couple of more that I think the Suns might have got bailed out on a couple of quick foul calls. In that moment that put him on the free throw line and prevented it from getting even more dicey. That was a game that you're right. Even last year, I feel like the Warriors would have come back if they had been semi-whole and won that game. And, you know, we would have been
They wouldn't have gotten down. They wouldn't have gotten down 27. They would only gotten down 19.
Yeah. And you win.
But they would have come back and won. Right. Exactly.
Poole would have done something late, or Curry would have done something late, or Clay would have done something late. And the story, and you're right, this is reminiscent of the heyday. The story at that point wouldn't have been that they got down 20 to the Suns without, you know, their top five players. The story would have been, oh my God, look at what Curry did late. Look at what Poole did late. Look at what Clay did late. He hit this amazing shot or made this amazing play or glared at somebody some way. And that would have been the story. Oh, ha ha, Suns, you guys stink. Demoralized you again. And now, you know, the Warriors are just not good enough to make any of that happen.
No, they're not. I mean, look, they're 20 and 21. And, you know, it's so easy to say, well, look, they did it last year. But this is where, you know, you got to look at it deeper than that. You know, things fell into place. It doesn't mean they were lucky. It doesn't mean they didn't deserve it. But for whatever reason, when the playoffs came around, everybody was healthy and they gelled. And I think a big part of the reason they gelled was because Wiggins was so easily integrated in a way. But JD, you know, then they, you know, whatever, they get Memphis and Ja gets hurt. Denver, they're getting without Murray and Porter. Then they end up getting Dallas when they had no right getting Dallas. Then they get Boston, who just wasn't quite ready. Again, not taking nothing away from the Warriors, but everything fell into place. And this year, they're not as good. So unless something changes in the second half, I don't believe they can go 43-39 and win it all. I don't.
No, I don't either. And I think it what it comes down to me is just the fact that if this team is whole, I'll put it this way. If this team is whole, what's the ceiling for this? Like if you're saying they've got the five starters and Jordan Poole and let's say DiVincenzo and maybe Kuminga and Lamb are 8 and 9, because that's really what it is going to probably be.
I mean, I think, honestly, you know, if they got to the finals, I think that would be a heck of a season, or it would end up being a heck of a run too.
And I think they can make a run. Like, here's the other thing. I think they can, you know, if they were, let's say, the sixth seed, and all right, playoffs start, they get their way to the sixth seed, they win 43 games or whatever, that's good enough this year to be the sixth, and they end up playing, let's say, Memphis in the first round. Let's just, you know, just hype it that the Warriors could dial it up and beat Memphis. They could beat Memphis. Maybe they're a little bit in their head. They could win that series. But I'll tell you right now, that series is going 6 or 7 games if the Warriors win it, at least 6 games.
Right.
You know, if not 7. And so you're talking about winning an emotional, hard-fought. Like, it wouldn't be easy if the Warriors beat them. They might beat them. And then you're talking about, okay, well, you're going and you're playing Denver now, a better version of Denver than you got last year. And it's like, well, could you beat Denver at that point? And the answer is yes, you probably could, but you're going to have less of a shot at beating Denver in a second round series after you just played a 6 or 7 game series against a team like Memphis than you would have last year in the first round when they didn't have two of their top three players. And now you're talking about more road games, and it's not that they can't win on the road, because we all know they can win on the road, but can you win twice on the road where you used to maybe only have to win once in a series on the road because now you don't have home court advantage? And let's say even if you do that, then who's waiting for you on the back end? You know, then is it maybe a Phoenix team that gets it together, you know, at some point and is whole? You know, who's left on the other end of that, you know, to play? You know, is it an upstart Pelicans or whatever? And even if you can make a run, to me, to win 4 series with the core group having to do it again and work even harder than they did last year, after working even harder in the regular season than they did last year, having less support from the role players than they're going to have compared to last year. Like, I think it's too tall of an ask unless they give themselves some semblance of breathing room or separation or just proof that this team can play at a high. Like, I want to know if this team can play 15-5 over a 20 game stretch, because I'm not sure they can. Like, even the team 2 years ago showed us they could be 15-5 down the stretch. This team hasn't even shown that they can do that as they're currently constituted. Before we get out of here, I want to ask you about Iguodala. What have you made of Iguodala? Just the mystery return. Like, oh, all of a sudden Iguodala's back. I thought that was weird. And I'll be honest with you, I don't see it. As far as, you know, you get down to the press conference afterwards and it's like, oh, Iguodala's in the mix and Iguodala's a factor. Like, to me, Iguodala's been a non-factor in 2 games.
Right.
And he almost feels a little bit like a sacred cow, Steiny, to use one of your favorite your favorite terms. Just immune from any kind of criticism. because he's Andre Iguodala, even though he didn't play well, he gets ejected for throwing the ball into the stands, which is an automatic ejection. Like,
right.
Iguodala is playing like a dude that belongs on the Clippers right now.
I mean, you know, he did kind of come back out of nowhere, and it's impossible not to try to connect the dot among Iguodala and then Ty Jerome and Lamb. And I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, those guys are coming up on 50. I mean, they got some time, obviously, but I mean, I think they realize they can't waste the roster spot. If Iguodala cannot play, they must replace him, I think is what they're saying, what they're thinking. And so I think they've said to Andre, look, give us January, see what you can do before the trade deadline, because not that he would be traded, but you could be working with 13 spots in your mind if you're moving on from Iguodala.
You think they'd cut him?
Yeah,
I mean, if they cut him, they pay him, and
sure,
obviously he could stick around to be a coach. He'd get his money, but it would also free up a roster spot to where I just don't. I mean, I'm finding it, and look, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I wear this in a couple of months, but I'm finding it hard to believe that Iguodala is going to be any kind of a factor when we start talking about, all right, your bench is Poole and DiVincenzo,
right,
and Iguodala as the, like, I just don't. I just don't see it. And it seems like he can only play 10 minutes a game, even at that right now. And again, I don't think he's playing that well. So the whole thing was odd, and it did make me wonder, kind of along the lines of what you said, did he come back maybe to give him a shot to where they could still do something with the roster, maybe involving him if he doesn't have enough left in the tank, or maybe if he just deems, you know what, I don't have enough to finish out this season. All right, Steiny, we'll call it on that note. Good stuff.
All right, man.
Again next week, we'll see how this road trip goes.
Yes, sir. It should be interesting.
All right, for Steiny, I'm JD, 95.7 The Game.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.